Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Paul Gant, and for the next hour, for the next two hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinions. And if you have an opinion, your number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you send email messages to the show at goforward.can@gmail.com. That's goforward.can@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by a couple of basketball wives, Gloria Govan, fiance of Matt Barnes, and also Ashley Walker, the girlfriend of NBA free agent, the NBA point guard, Rafer Alston. So they're going to stop pulling by, and we're going to talk about the show. We're going to talk about the show and more. So, I mean, we're definitely going to, looking forward to that. And so they will be by on the show on here today. Also today, we're going to talk about the NFL playoffs. And it's a divisional round now. And I always enjoyed the first 2 weeks of playoffs because you have games on Saturday, and you have games on Sunday. So both of the days, there's football. So I always enjoyed these last 2 weeks. That's a wild card week, and that's the divisional playoff. And I always enjoyed it. Always enjoyed them. And I'm definitely looking forward to that as we continue to make that road to Dallas for Super Bowl 45. Also, as an outside possibility, we could be joined by Eagle defensive tackle Jeff Owens. Jeff injured his left knee in the game against the Minnesota Vikings in week 16. So Jeff may stop him by and may talk about, if he does, we'll talk about his situation and what's going on with the Eagles as their season. And then speaking of the Eagles, I want to start right there. Last week at Lincoln Financial Field, the season, the big season, the glorious season, the beautiful ride that Michael Vick was on, ended last week in Philadelphia. It was a game that, if you look at it, Aaron Rodgers, 180 yards, 3 touchdowns. So, but the key part to that game, man, Aaron Rodgers played well, but the key part to that game was the running game with James Starks, the unheralded rookie out of Buffalo, came in, ran for 123 yards, and was a big reason. I mean, he kept the Eagle offense off the field. And by him running the ball the way they, by the Green Bay running the ball the way they ran the ball in that particular game, you kept the Philadelphia, the explosive Philadelphia Eagle offense off the field. And so you didn't give a chance for Michael Vick and DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and those boys to do what they do. There wasn't an opportunity of that because they were kept off the field by the run game of the Green Bay Packers. That was the difference in that game, and that was the unexpected thing in that game. That's not something you expected. You didn't expect the Green Bay Packers to have a 100-yard rusher in James Starks. You didn't expect James Starks to run for 123 yards. You didn't expect it. That was the unexpected. You expected Aaron Rodgers to play well. You expected Mike Vick to play well. But you didn't expect that run game. And you didn't expect 23 carries for James Starks and 123 yards. You didn't expect that. That was the unexpected in this football game. And that's what carried the day for the Green Bay Packers in my mind. I mean, it was their ability. It was their ability to run the football. I mean, coming into the game in the regular season, they were 24th in offensive rushing. They were 24th in that category. 24th in rushing. They were 24th. So you didn't expect that. That was the unexpected. And that's what carried the day, in my mind, for the Green Bay Packers, and that's the reason they have moved on to the divisional round against the Atlanta Falcons. That's the reason. It was that run game. It was that run game. Now, their defense played well, played very fairly well. Mike Vick did throw close to 300 yards, ran for a touchdown, and unfortunately had that costly interception. If you listen to the show, you know, I'm a big Eagles fan. I love my Eagles, and I'm not going to deny that, and I'm not going to be partial. I mean, I'm not going to be impartial here. I'm going to be partial. I'm a big Eagles fan, and watching that football game, I expect going in, obviously, if you heard my prediction. I made some good predictions, by the way. I was 3-for-4. Only game I lost was this Eagle game. And, yes, I did pick the Seattle Seahawks to beat the New Orleans Saints, believe it or not. But anyway, let's go back to the Eagle game. And looking at this football game, you figured, like I said before, you figured, okay, the Packers are going to be able to move the ball. You figured that the Packers defense was going to play well because they're a good defense. And you figured Mike Vick was also going to play well because he is Mike Vick and he's having a great season. He had a great season, MVP caliber season. But one thing that no one knew was going to happen with James Stark. No one knew that was going to happen. No one knew that was going to happen. And like I said before, kept the Eagle offense off the field, and it allowed the Packers to do what they had to do in this particular football game. And watching the Eagles and watching that last drive, I mean, they had opportunities there. They had a big opportunity. I mean, many people will refer back to the two missed kicks by David Akers. Big, it was big. I mean, Andy Reid said it. You can count. They were 6 points. 5 points was the difference in the football game. We also have to look at the Packers side of things. I mean, they had a sure touchdown at the end of the first half by James Jones, which he dropped. I mean, that was a sure touchdown. That was a sure 6 points, and he dropped it. He dropped it in that particular football game. So, I mean, we can all say, yes, David Akers got to make those field goals, and he does. There's no doubt about it. David Akers has to make those field goals. But he didn't. But you look at it there. You look at that, but you have to look at the Packers side as well. And you have to look at James Jones in that play because, again, that was 6 points. That was 6 points. I mean, that would have made the score 21-3. And in all intents and purposes, may have put the game away. But it was a perfect pass by Aaron Rodgers and just a drop, just out-and-out drop by James Jones. But with all that being said, the Eagles had an opportunity down the stretch there in that last drive. And that's all you can ever ask for. Michael Vick, your best player on the field, give you an opportunity to win. And they got down to the 27, and clock was running. They just got a first down, Riley Cooper over the middle. DeSean Jackson, Riley Cooper both thought that Michael Vick would clock the football, but he didn't clock it. He kept going, and he stepped back and threw to the end zone. A little on his throne, and Tremont Williams made the big interception for the Packers, and the Packers moved on, and the Eagles went home. But it was a game that, like I said before, I figured the Eagles would win. I thought the Eagles would win, and it was just tough on me. And then everybody can say Mike Vick hasn't played well. Going down the stretch, he hasn't played well. The offense hasn't played well. The Eagles haven't played well. But let's look at this. I mean, first of all, the Eagles, if you look at them, they don't even belong in this position. If you looked at them at the beginning of the year, this was supposed to be rebuilding or retooling, as they would like to tell you, for the Eagles. So they were supposed to retool this particular year. But anyway, Michael Vick came in and he played off the charts. MVP caliber season, like I said before. He played off the charts. He played off the charts in this particular season. And playing off the charts, he elevated the Eagles football team. I mean, if it wasn't for Michael Vick's superhuman play, the Eagles would not be in the playoffs. If Kevin Cobb was your quarterback, the Eagles would not be in the playoffs. But it was Michael Vick's play that carried the day for the Philadelphia Eagles. He carried them to this position. he carried them to this position. And it basically came down to Michael Vick had to have superhuman efforts for this team in a lot of ways to advance and to make it to the Super Bowl. And he had almost 300 yards passing. He almost had 300 yards passing. If he would have actually carried them through, he would have had over 300 yards and would have had hopefully another touchdown. But again, they lost. The season's over. But anyway, I mean, I guess you can blame Michael Vick for throwing that pass, make throwing that interception there. Sure, you can blame him for that. But Eagles are not there without Michael Vick, and they're not in these playoffs without Michael Vick. Michael Vick is the reason the Eagles made it this far. He is the reason. I mean, the defense, if you get into the red zone, you're going to score points. And 97% of the time it's happened. When you got to that red zone against the Eagles, you were either getting the field goal or you were getting the touchdown. You were getting something. And that's what happened. I mean, the Packers made their trips to the red zone, and the Packers came away with points. They came away with three Aaron Rodgers touchdowns. So when they got into the red zone, they scored points. And the trend continued in this particular football game for the Green Bay Packers. For the Philadelphia Eagles defense. And so Aaron Rodgers got the Packers into the red zone three times, and three times they scored touchdowns. Three touchdown passes to Crabtree, to Jones, and to Jackson. Three touchdown passes for Aaron Rodgers. And that was pretty much the reason I believe the Eagles lost this football game. Yes, Michael Vick could have played a little better. Yes, the offense could have played better. The offensive line did not play well either. Vick was under a lot of pressure, took a lot of hits in this particular football game. He took a lot of hits in this particular football game. He's taken a lot of hits throughout this year. And to be honest with you, if Michael Vick wasn't in that game or wasn't the Eagles starting quarterback, there's no way Kevin Cobb was way offensive line play would have made it through the season. There's no way. No way that would have happened. No way. There's no way that could have happened. There's no way Kevin Cobb would have made it through this season. I mean, you saw what happened in the first game where he was concussed by Clay Matthews Jr. So you saw that, and you knew that there was no way that Kevin Cobb would have made it through this season. No way. No way it could have happened. But then, definitely, the Eagles have to fix that red zone situation. They have to fix it. I mean, if they don't fix it, they're gonna run into some problems again. And you're going to have to rely on superhuman efforts of Michael Vick. You're going to have to continue to rely on superhuman efforts of Michael Vick. And, you know, Michael Vick, be as it may, Michael Vick had a stellar season and had a great year for the Philadelphia Eagles. And he is the reason, like I said before, he is the reason that the Eagles made it this far. He made it this far. They made it this far because of one, Michael Vick. And there's no way getting around it. But Michael Vick, again, he needed to have that superhuman effort. He needed to have those superhuman efforts to continue the Eagles in the season. He needed that. But again, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles and your defense, you can't allow people to score every time they enter into your red zone. Every time they enter your red zone, you can't allow people to score. And that's what they did throughout this whole season. They allowed teams to score once they got into the red zone. You know, once you get into the red zone against the Philadelphia Eagles, once you get into the red zone, you are going to score points. And teams have ventured into the Eagles' red zone 43 times. Only one did an opponent fail to come away with at least a field goal. Only one. So only one time did an opponent just come away with a field goal. 33 times the other team scored a touchdown. So 33 out of 43 times in the red zone, the other team have scored touchdowns against his Eagle defense. That's a problem. And that's a problem that the Eagles must correct going into this offseason. I mean, there's some areas they definitely need to improve in. The offensive line. You saw Winston Justice after a few penalties. He was pulled in that particular football game. That needs to be taken care of. And that needs to be taken care of. And I heard reports that maybe Winston Justice could possibly be traded. But they need to upgrade there. They need to upgrade there on the right side of that line. Nick Cole, Maxine Gillis, and Winston Justice, they just didn't get it done. The left side of the line is the strength with Todd Harriman's and Jason Peters. But they have to do something with that right side of the line. They have to. They have to do something with that secondary as well. Not a great secondary. And they have to do something with that defensive line. They have to get pressure on the quarterback. I mean, they got no pressure on Aaron Rodgers. The only time they really got pressure on Aaron Rodgers is when they brought the blitz. That's the only time they got pressure on Rodgers in that particular football game. So, with all that being said, and they have, you also have to go to the whole Michael Vick decision and what is going to be done there. Do you sign to a long-term deal? Do you give him a do you franchise him if that still exists after the new CBA? Do you do that with Michael Vick? Do you franchise this guy, one-year franchise him, pay him the money, maybe $16, $17 million, pay him the money, see what you got there. Keep Kevin Cobb on the roster because you have him for one more year. You franchise him, see what you have there. If Michael Vick still has the great year that he had this year, then you may need to sign him to a long-term deal. And you go over there. But my thing is, you have Kevin Cobb under a contract for 1 year. And unless you get some kind of crazy deal or a deal that you just can't turn down, you have to bring Kevin Cobb back next year. You have to. Because the way Michael Vick's style of play, he's going to be prone to injury. His style of play, we've seen it. His style of play is a little reckless. And hopefully with age, he'll be able to find ways not to take so many hits. But also behind an offensive line has to get better. Because even if you figure he took a lot of hits in the pocket as well. So the offensive line has to get better. But anyway, if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I think I franchise Mike Vick. Just keep him around and make him prove himself for another year. Keep Kevin Cobb unless I'm blown away by some crazy offer. And I go at it with Michael Vick as my starting quarterback going into training camp, mini camp, and all the other camps. And going into the season, Michael Vick would be my starter. That's the way I would handle it if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think I handle it that way for this reason. You just don't, I mean, Michael Vick did slow down near the end of the year. Could have been a combination of all the hits that he's taken. And also could have been a combination of him not playing football in the last 2 years. So a lot of things to let to him slowing down near the end. But you figure what the Eagles have to do and what the Eagles need to do is find a better way. They have to protect him. That means they have to upgrade that offensive line. And they have to do that. They definitely have to do that. You got to upgrade. You got to upgrade there. And you got to protect this guy a little better. And if you can do that, if you can do these things, then hopefully he'll take less hits. And hopefully he'll be able to stick around for possibly, an 18-game season, as there has been talk that could happen. So, my opinion, as we stand here today, January 15th, I'd bring Michael Vick back. If franchise tag is still around, I'd franchise him. Let him prove himself again. Keep Tim and Cobb on my roster. Unless you're blown away by some crazy offer. And I go at it in the 2011 season like that. That's what I would do if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles. And there's also talk. I mean, they definitely need another corner. They never replaced Sheldon Brown. Ellis Hobbs, he was there for a little bit, struggled a little bit, and ultimately he was hurt. and he was out for the year, and Dmitri Patterson came in and struggled as well. But Sandy Alsenwag, the corner for the Oakland Raiders, is a free agent. Maybe explore that if it can work within your salary cap. I mean, you're paying a lot of money to Asante Samuel. I'm not sure if you want to play two corners, big-time money. And so you definitely have to think about that. And hopefully, I mean, this is a team that, in terms of defensive line, they've drafted Brandon Graham, did tear the ACL this year, but you drafted him with the notion that he would also be opposite of Trent Cole, and he also would provide a formidable pass rush for your ball club. So, with all that being said, the Eagles do have some issues. The Eagles, they can correct them. They definitely can correct these issues. We'll see what happens in the draft. We'll also see what happens in free agency. We also have to see what happens with this new CBA and whether or not there'll be a lockout. And we have to see how all that shakes out. But the Eagles definitely have a chance and an opportunity, I believe, to take this thing to the next level if Michael Vick continue to play the way Michael Vick played this year, and if they can make some corrections on the offensive line and on the defensive side of the football. If they can do that, they can be back at this point, at least to the playoffs and possibly beyond, and maybe get a bye next time around, and who knows what could happen with that. Also today, last week, your man, your boy, Ball Gant, yes, myself, talking to the third person. I was the guy who came out and felt, I had a feeling that the Seattle Seahawks would get it done against the New Orleans Saints. I had that feeling. And by golly, it was the right feeling. Because guess what happened last week? Guess what happened last week? The 12th man was out and about in Seattle. The 12th man did his part. And Matt Hasselbeck, Marshawn Lynch, Brandon Stokely, Mike Williams, and the Seattle Seahawks did the unthinkable. They did the unthinkable. They did what many felt was impossible. They beat the New Orleans Saints. Yes, the 7-9 Seattle Seahawks beat the 11-5 New Orleans Saints. And they did it behind the strength of Matt Hasselbeck's four touchdowns. Four touchdowns by Matt Hasselbeck. He played well. He played well. He's just laying the ball in there to Mike Williams, laying the ball in there to Brandon Stokely, laying the ball into the tight end John Carlson two times. I mean, he played well. It was one of the biggest upsets in playoff history. And how about that run by Marshawn Lynch? Breaking tackles. And he just, that stiff arm to Tracy Porter, he just threw him. Just like, Tracy, get off me. I will not be denied. And he wasn't going to be denied there. He wasn't going to be denied. That was one of the greatest runs I've ever seen in my life. That was one of the greatest runs I've ever seen in my life. 67 yards. And he broke tackles after tackles. I believe eight to nine tackles he broke. And he just romped his way into the end zone. And it was enough for Seattle. Seattle would take the lead with building their lead there. And ultimately, they would go on to win this game and ultimately advance. I mean, and I said before coming into this football game, the 12th man would be big. And I also said that I felt that this team, Pete Carroll, was going to get behind this team and push this team and say, you know what, play that card. You know what, everybody's doubted you. No one thought you belonged here. You don't belong here. You're 7-9. You're under 500. You don't belong here. You were blown out by this team in the regular season. You don't belong here. You're playing the worst division of football. You don't belong here. But guess what? Pete Carroll, he pushed buttons. He pushed that card. He inspired this team. He pushed this team. And ultimately, this team because of it, that is one of the reasons this team is moving on, improbably. And if you look at it, New Orleans, I mean, like I said before, coming into this game, I mean, they were missing some guys. They were missing Pierre Thomas and Chris Ivory. They also missed their safety, Malcolm Jenkins, and their linebacker, Danny Clark. I mean, they were missing some guys here in this particular football game. They were missing some guys. And with that being said, I said with those guys being out, that gave the Seattle Seahawks an opportunity. To me, that gave them a chance. And, of course, the 12th man also gave them a big chance. And that Seattle team, and that Seattle crowd, that Seattle team fed off that Seattle crowd. They fed off that crowd. They really fed off that crowd. And they were inspired, and they played, man. They played some great football there. And it was a great football game. This was a great week of football. This was a great week of football. I mean, you had the Seattle game, the improbable game there. You had the Eagles, Packers, again, another tough, nip and tuck type of football. And you also had the Jets and the Colts in that particular football game. You had that game there, and that was another toughie there. And, I mean, other than the Ravens and the Chiefs, where the Ravens won in there and just dominated the football game 130-7, the rest were tough football games. And I said that. Going into these playoffs, it was going to be tough going into these playoffs. It was going to be fun going into these playoffs. A lot of these teams are close. They're evenly matched football teams here. When you have these evenly matched football teams, you're going to have close games. You're going to have good games. And that's what we have here. And I'm expecting the same this upcoming weekend. I mean, you figure you have New England and the Jets. I mean, the third time these teams are facing off. Jets won the first time. Patriots routed them the second time. Now it's the third time. Tom Brady, an amazing year, 34 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions. Crazy, crazy stat lines for Tom Brady. And the Jets finally exercised, Rex Ryan finally exercised the demon of Peyton Manning and beat the Colts. And this is, this is the Rex. And a lot of trash talking going back and forth this particular week between these two teams, Welker, Kamari, Brady. Everybody talking trash, and the NFL, they come out and said, limit the trash talking. But anyway, these teams went back and forth, lots of trash talking. I mean, these teams know each other very well. They know each other very well. Very well. So there's lots of trash talking going on between these two teams. And with all that being said, with all the trash being talked in the Patriots locker room, with all the trash being talked in the Jets locker room, this is going to be a great football game. And it's going to be great, man. This is rematch. This is rematch Saturday. And also the Pack, all these games are rematches, actually. All these games are rematches. The Bears actually lost to the Seahawks in the regular season. And the Packers lost to the Falcons, last drive fashion, to the Falcons and Matty Ice in the regular season. So this is a rematch here of all the games in the regular season, of these games in the regular season. This is a rematch Saturday. This is a rematch here. Lots of rematches, and so these teams know each other. They played each other, and they know each other, especially the Jets, the Patriots, especially the Ravens, and the Steelers. So lots of trash talking going on. And so who's going to back it up? Who's going to back it up? I got to be honest, I picked the Patriots to go to the Super Bowl. But I think the Jets really have a shot here. I really do. I think they're going to come in here and I think they're going to play some inspired football. I really do. I think you're going to get a good effort and a big effort from the defensive side of football. From the New York Jets. My only question is, and my question, I have been questioning the Jets all year, and my question is about Mark Sanchez. I mean, he struggled against the Indianapolis Colts, even though he led them on that game-winning drive, but he was aided by a great kickoff return by Antonio Cromartie, who put them essentially at the their own 47-yard line. So he put them in a pretty good position there. But anyway, Mark Sanchez made the plays, and ultimately the Jets went on. But, I mean, you look at week one, not week one, but you look at the first time these two teams met. In week two, the Jets did it by their defense. Their defense was the one that carried them through in that football game, and they won that particular football game 28-14. Things are totally different now. Things are totally different now. I mean, Randy Moss is gone. So the Patriots are a different team. They're definitely a different team. Danny Woodhead has had a bigger role now. So you have Deion Branch back in the mix. You have Tom Brady playing great football. You had Tom Brady playing some great football. So, but again, these two teams, they split in the regular season. But everybody, you have to give the Patriots an edge because of they are at home. Also, you have to give them an edge because they just beat the Jets 45-3. They blew them out. Game wasn't even close. You also have to give the Patriots another edge because of the way that Tom Brady is playing. You have to give them an edge because of the way Tom Brady is playing. And in that first game between these two teams, the Patriots and the Jets, Mark Sanchez was 21-30, 220 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he played well. He played well in that particular football game. And Randy Moss made a touchdown catch. Beautiful one-handed grab in that particular football game. But Randy Moss is not in this game. He's since been traded. But anyway, with that being said, the Patriots have taken off after Moss was gone. They've taken off. Tom Brady in that particular football game did throw 2 interceptions. 2 of the 4 that he's thrown this whole entire year. So the Jets, that defense played well in that particular football game. We fast forward the second time around these two teams play. And I said 34 touchdowns, actually 36 touchdowns for Tom Brady. I chipped him 2 touchdowns. But the second time around, whole totally different story. Tom Brady, 326 yards, 4 touchdowns. Then Jarvis Green-Ellis, 2 touchdowns. Danny Woodhead, he had 4 receptions in that game for 104 yards, and they dominated. They dominated the New York Jets in that particular football game. Mark Sanchez forcing the 3 interceptions, and the Patriots rolled 45-3. So I guess it's now time for a prediction. And looking at this particular football game, I think I like the New England Patriots. I said before I picked them to go to the Super Bowl. So obviously, I like them in this particular football game because of Tom Brady and because of Mark Sanchez, because of their quarterback. Quarterbacks win championships. Defenses do too. But quarterbacks win championships as well. And I don't believe in Mark Sanchez. And I just don't think he can get the job done. I don't believe in Mark Sanchez yet. I think he has the ability and the potential to be a very, very good quarterback in this particular football league. I really do. And a championship caliber quarterback. But I just don't think he's ready. Not this year. And with that being said, I don't think the Jets can score enough points to compete with the Patriots team. But I do think the Jets defense will play well here. I do think they will play well, but I do think Tom Brady and the Patriots will get their points. And I do like the Patriots to win this particular football game in advance, the AFC championship game. I think that's what will happen here. I think that's what will happen here. And forget all the trash talking and all that. That's just talk. But it comes down to what you do on that football field. And, again, I expect the Patriots to do all the talking on the field and ultimately get it done and ultimately move to the next round of the playoffs, and that's the AFC title game. That's what I expect. Another rivalry game, if you will, the Ravens and the Steelers. Two teams that don't like each other, just like the Patriots and Jets. Two teams that know each other very well, just like the Patriots and Jets. Two teams that have split in the regular season, just like the Patriots and Jets. But again, I look at this game now, and the game is in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh does have the home field advantage. But the Ravens did win in Pittsburgh this particular season. Granted, Charlie Batch was your starter, not Ben Roethlisberger, so it's a totally different situation at the quarterback position. But if I look at this particular football game, you know what you're going to get with a Ravens field game. You're going to get hard fought, tough, hard hitting, trash talking type of football game. And, of course, it's going to be close. It's going to be close. All their games are close. I mean, if you look at it in this particular, in the regular season, Ravens beat the Steelers 17-14. But that came down to a final drive where Joe Flacco hit T.J. Uchenna-Udoka for a game-winning touchdown. And also, these two teams met again. They met again in Baltimore in December. In week 13, I was right the first time. Week 13, these two teams met. And the Ravens lost to the Steelers 13-10. The Steelers went in there and they won. The Big Ben was hobbled in that particular football game. Great play by Troy Polamalu, forced a fumble, and ultimately led to a Steelers touchdown. Ultimately, it led to the Steelers winning that particular football game. It ultimately led to the Steelers winning the division. And ultimately, it led to the Steelers getting home field advantage in this particular football game. But I don't think the home field advantage will matter much in this game. I like the Ravens. I like the way they've been playing of late. I like what I saw against the Kansas City Chiefs. And granted, this is not the Kansas City Chiefs. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is a totally different football team. But this is a team that was on a four-game winning streak to end the regular season. And a team, I think, with Joe Flacco, who's playing pretty well right now. Their run game is playing pretty well. And you know what you're going to get from that defense. Granted, there has been some struggle from the defense in the secondary, and they are 21st against the pass. But I just think this defense will do enough to ultimately win this particular football game with Baltimore. And I think Joe Flacco is going to make enough plays for the Ravens to win this particular football game in advance to the AFC title game. I just feel it with the Ravens. I feel the team that they have. I like their swagger right now. I like the way they've been playing down the stretch of the regular season. I just think going into this football game, I think it doesn't matter with home field advantage with these two teams. Both of these two teams won at the other team's home field. So home field advantage really doesn't matter much to me in this particular football game. These teams know each other very well. They know each other very well. There is no love lost between these two teams. No love lost between these two teams. And the Ravens, they're great on the road. You know, they go on the road and they do their thing on the road. They go on the road and do their thing. They're a great team on the road in the playoffs. So, with all that being said, I like the Ravens to continue their success on the road. And ultimately, I like the Baltimore Ravens to advance to the AFC title game, to meet the New England Patriots in the AFC title game for a shot at the Super Bowl. That's the way I see it. That's what I like. That's my opinion. And if you want to score, I like the Ravens to win 21-17. Baltimore Ravens will win this particular football game 21-17. And again, they will advance to the AFC title game to face the New England Patriots, in my opinion. That's my opinion. That's how I see the AFC. Let's move over to the NFC now. And again, more rematches, more of the same. More rematches in the NFC, just like in the AFC. These two teams have played each other in the regular season. So it's not like they're strangers. They know each other. These two teams know each other pretty well. So with that being said, I think it's going to, again, be some good football. It's going to be good football. And in saying that, I really like to start with Seattle and Chicago. And, you know, I jumped on the Seattle bandwagon. I am one of the 12th men. I am part of the 12th man right now, at least for these playoffs. And I'm riding the Seattle team. I think Pete Carroll will, again, work his magic. The Pete Carroll magic, I guess you can say. I think Pete Carroll will work his magic. And I think, ultimately, in working his magic, he will have the Seattle team inspired. He will have the Seattle team ready to play. And say what you will about the record. They're 7-9. They play in the worst division in football. So what? Who cares? Tell me something I don't know. Irrelevant at this point. They're in the tournament. They're in the game. So there's an opportunity. It's just like if you're trying to go into a party and you don't belong in that party. But somehow, some way, you work your way into that party. And getting into that party, you're going to do what you got to do once you're in that party. You're in the party. You made it in. So you're going to do what you got to do. And that's what I look at here with the Seattle team. They're in this party. They have an opportunity to dance. They're in the dance. So if you're in the dance, you might as well dance. If you made it to the dance, if you got into the dance, you might as well dance. And I think Seattle's going to dance. They're going to do a lot of dancing in this particular football game. They're going to do a lot of dancing in this particular football game. And so I give Seattle a big shot in this game. I really do. And they did beat Chicago earlier in the regular season. They sacked Jay Cutler six times in that regular season game. And they won 23-20. They won 23-20. So they harassed Jay Cutler in that particular football game. And in that game, actually, Chicago was missing some linemen in that game. But it wasn't Chicago. And Seattle played well. They really played well in that game. And Matt Hasselbeck was effective in that particular football game. He threw for 242 yards and a touchdown. And Jay Cutler was equally effective, other than the sacks, but good fault of his. He was 17 for 39. Not great. But he did throw for 290 yards. But I just have a feeling about the Seattle team. Is it possible they have peaked at the right time? Matt Hasselbeck has played well, and I think he will continue to play well. And I think, and I'm not big on this Bears football team, I tell you. I mean, I like them on the defensive side of the ball. I love their defensive line with Julius Peppers and those boys. But I'm not in love with Jay Cutler. And Jay Cutler can turn this football over. He can turn the football over. And he's done it. I mean, we can go back to that four-interception game against the Washington Redskins. I mean, Jay Cutler, 16 interceptions to 23 touchdowns. So there is an opportunity there for Seattle. Jay Cutler can throw this football around recklessly. So there's an opportunity there for Seattle, especially if they can get the type of pressure they got in that first game. I mean, six sacks in that first game. If they can get that same type of pressure as they did in the first game, they can win this football game. Not only can they win this football game, they will win this football game. Who would have thunk it? Seattle in the NFC title game. Who would have thunk it? Well, guess what? I'm thinking it. I believe it. I see it. And it will happen. The Seattle Seahawks, 7-9. The Seattle Seahawks playing the worst division in football. The Seattle Seahawks. Yes, those Seattle Seahawks will Well, beat the Chicago Bears today. And will go to the NFC title game. As crazy as that sounds, it will happen. I am a part of the 12th man for the playoffs. I am a part of the 12th man. I think Seattle gets it done. I think they get it done. I think they get it done, same score, 23-20. I think they get it done the same type of fashion, 23-20 is my prediction. Orlando Marat will kick the game on the field goal in this particular football game, and the Seattle Seahawks will move on to the NFC title game and beat the Chicago Bears 23-20. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. They did it before in Chicago. Why can't they do it again? Why can't they do it again? And I think this team may have peaked at the right time of the year. I think this team can get it done. I think they will. And wouldn't it be crazy if they didn't get it done on Sunday, that they find some way somehow to beat the winner of the Falcons and the Packers? Wouldn't that be something? That would be unheard of. That would be the unthinkable. And that would go against everything I said, because I said coming into these playoffs, 5 of the 6 teams in the playoffs in the NFC had a legitimate shot of making it to the Super Bowl. You know who that 16 is? I took out. That 16 was the Seattle Seahawks. That was the team that I said did not have an opportunity or a shot to make it to the Super Bowl. They had the opportunity, obviously, because they're in the playoffs. But in terms of a shot, that was the team I thought did not have a shot of making it to the Super Bowl. But guess what? Feelings change. People change. Seasons change. And guess what? A change is coming. A change is coming. Your Seattle Seahawks they're my Seattle Seahawks right now. And whoever's out there, Seattle Seahawks. I'm a 12th man. I'm part of the 12th man. They will make it to the NFC title game. And say what you will, 31st offensively in running, in rushing yards, excuse me. They average 89 yards a game. But guess what? Marshawn Lynch, 131 yards rushing against the New Orleans Saints. 19th in passing yards. But guess what? Matt Hasselbeck did his thing. 272 yards, 4 touchdowns. So guess what? They bucked all the trends. Defensively, they didn't play too well. They are 27th against the pass, and Drew Brees had 400 yards passing, and they are 21st against the run. So, say what you will statistically about the Seattle Seahawks. They're in the dance. They're in the dance. They're in the dance, and they have an opportunity to dance. So once you make it into the dance, you do what you got to do. You do what you got to do. Doesn't matter how you got there, you're in there. Now you make it happen. I think that's what the Seattle Seahawks will do, as they will beat the Chicago Bears 23-20, in my opinion, in advance to the NFC title game. You heard it here. You heard it here. You heard it here. It will happen. It will happen. Believe it. Believe it. It's going to happen. And another rematch, the Packers and the Falcons. Green Bay Packers coming off of tough victory in Philadelphia against the Eagles. They advanced. They're going up against the Atlanta Falcons, the team 13-3. Very impressive at the Georgia Dome. 7-1 at home. Matty Ice, Matt Ryan, doing his thing. 28 touchdowns for Matty Ice. over 3,500 yards passing, 3,700 yards, over 3,700 yards passing for Matty Ice. So the guys had a great year. Roddy White also had a great year, 115 receptions, over 1,300 yards receiving to go along with another 10 touchdowns. Great year in Atlanta. They have the bye. They had the bye, and now they have home field advantage throughout these whole playoffs. But I like that mojo with the Green Bay Packers. I like what I see there. This was a team that I picked at the beginning of the year to make it to the Super Bowl. I just like what I see out of Green Bay. They won in there in Philadelphia, and they don't run the ball well, but guess what? They ran for 123 yards. They ran for 123 yards. James Starks out of nowhere, pretty much. They ran for 123 yards. And this was a team that was 24th in rushing offense going into this football game and going in the regular season. They were 24th in rushing in the regular season. 24th. And James Starks rips the Eagles for 123 yards, and which I thought was the edge in that particular football game. And it's one of the reasons that the Packers are still playing today is because of James Starks in that running game. Aaron Rodgers continues to play well and was stellar against the Eagles, threw for another three touchdowns. Not big-time yardage, only 180 yards, but threw for the three touchdowns. And they got big-time defensive play out of Clay Matthews Jr., Tremont Williams, who had that big interception at the end of the football game against the Eagles. And then I wouldn't say they held Michael Vick in check, but they played well. And they did what they had to do in that particular football game. But here's the key here. The Atlanta Falcons can run the football. And they run it very well with Michael Turner. Over 1,300 yards rushing and another 12 touchdowns. So they run the ball well. The Packers, they struggle against the run. And you're reading those boys for whatever reason, didn't get to Memo in that particular football game because LeSean McCoy only ran the ball 12 times. But anyway, Packers are 18th against the run. The Atlanta Falcons, a team that runs the ball very well with Michael Turner. They run the ball very well with Michael Turner. So there's an opportunity there for them to make some plays. There's an opportunity in that run game for them to make plays. And I think that's going to be the advantage. That's going to be a advantage, I should say, for the Atlanta Falcons. But again, I don't love this Falcon defense. And I don't love this Falcon team. I mean, they're 22nd against the pass. And one thing Green Bay Packers do well, they throw the football very well with Aaron Rodgers and James Jones and Greg Jennings and Donald Driver and those boys. They throw the ball well. And they're fifth offensively in passing yards. They're fifth. They're fifth, the Packers are. So they're going to put up some numbers, I believe. And if you look at this first game between these two teams, it came down to the end. And with that being said, the Atlanta Falcons won the football game, but it was close. It was close. Matty Ice did what Matty Ice does. He led the Falcons down the field for a scoring drive, which ended in a field goal, which ended in the Atlanta Falcons getting it done, and ultimately the Atlanta Falcons winning that particular football game. But anyway, it was a tough game. It was a nip and tuck type of football game, and a game that was anybody's game. And with that being said, I believe that this game, again, is anybody's game. Same thing. Anybody's game. And since I believe it is anybody's game, I believe, in my mind, that in this game, the Green Bay Packers will get it done. And the Green Bay Packers will move on to the NFC title game. I think the Green Bay Packers will get it done here. I don't love Atlanta. I really don't. I don't love the defense. I don't love this team. I don't love them. So I just think, with that being said, I really like the Green Bay Packers to win this particular football game. And four, the Green Bay Packers to advance the NFC title game. And the way I have it playing out, believe it or not, the Green Bay Packers will have to travel, in my mind, the way I have this playing out, will have to travel to Seattle and face the Seattle Seahawks. How improbable is that? How improbable is that? That the Seattle Seahawks, the 7-9 Seattle Seahawks, could have a home playoff game, and that home playoff game, another home playoff game, I should say, and that home playoff game could be in the NFC title game. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you remember that particular game, the Falcons and the Packers. The Packers would score, Aaron Rodgers, the Jordy Nelson, 10 yards out. The Packers would tie that football game. But on the ensuing kickoff, the Packers would call for a face mask penalty. And essentially, the Falcons had the ball in midfield, so they didn't have to travel far to set up Matt Bryan for the game-winning field goal. And it was from 47 yards out. So, I mean, it was, in some respect, improbable in a lot of ways, or at least that's what helped Matty Ice and the Falcons win that particular football game. It's a rarity that you see that particular situation where you'll have a face mask down the stretch there where you essentially will start at the 49, pretty much start in the other team's territory. I don't think that doesn't happen often enough for it to be a trend. It's not a trend. It's something that happened in that particular football game. And I think in looking at that and looking at everything and putting this all whole thing together, when it's all said and done, like the Green Bay Packers will get it done and win this particular football game. And the score I have, the Packers 31 and the Falcons 28. So there you have it. Game and there you have it, my predictions for this divisional round, and it goes as follows. It goes as follows. I like the Patriots over the Jets. I like the Patriots to win that game 28-20. But I think the Jets defense will play well, but I just think Tom Brady and those boys will put up 28 points, but I think the Jets defense play well there. I like the Ravens over the Steelers. I like the Seahawks over the Bears. I like the Packers over the Atlanta Falcons. So, I like three road teams here. And I guess you could say your boy does have a track record because I was 3-for-4 last weekend. Only game I lost was kind of an emotional pick on my part, maybe, in the Eagles-Packers game. Only game I lost. But I told the world Seattle would be the same. I told the world that the Ravens would beat the Chiefs. I told the world that the Colts would beat the Jets. I told the world all this. I guess some of the world believed me, some didn't. Shame on those who didn't, and great kudos to those who did. But, again, write it down. Put on a piece of paper. Ravens, Packers, Seahawks, and Patriots. All advance this particular weekend in the NFC and the AFC as divisional playoffs kick off today, 4:30, with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And I said it before at the beginning of the show, I enjoy these first two rounds of the playoffs because you have a game on Saturday and you have a game on Sunday. That's enjoyable. That's enjoyable to me because this is it. After this week, it's over. You have the two games, the two championship games, and that's on Sunday. And then, of course, you have the Pro Bowl if you're into that. Not my cup of tea. I don't like boring football, and that's exactly what that is. And, of course, you have the Super Bowl. So, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in this week in the National Football League. Should be interesting. Should be exciting. And I can't wait to watch it. I cannot wait to watch it. We have the final hour of Go For It starting now. Welcome back to Go For It. Final hour of Go For It. Expected to be joined by a couple of basketball wives, Ashley Walker at 2:05, and also expected to be joined by Gloria Govan. Gloria is the fiance of Matt Barnes, and Ashley is the girlfriend of point guard Rayfall Austin. So it should be interesting to get their thoughts on that particular show and see what they're thinking. See what they're thinking. It should be interesting to see and hear what these girls truly are thinking about the show and about what goes on week in and week out on basketball-wise. We'll see what goes on there. I want to switch gears to basketball real quickly now. Speaking of basketball, and basketball-wise, Lala is not a basketball wife, at least not on this show, but her and Carmelo Anthony are married, and a lot of talk about Carmelo and trades to the Nets, trades to the Knicks, and so on and so forth. Carmelo actually recently came out and said that it's always been his dream to play in New York and play in New York City. Now, he wouldn't say whether that's the Nets or the Knicks, but I would assume if you want to play in New York City, you want to play for the Knicks. But anyway, my opinion. But the Nets are moving to Brooklyn, so maybe he's talking about the Nets as well. But a lot of talk, a lot of speculation about the trade of Carmelo Anthony, possibly to the Nets, possibly to the Knicks, possibly to Houston. You hear all the different scenarios, but as it's looking right now, we don't know. It definitely looks like Carmelo will be moved. It's just a matter of when. It's just a matter of where. And will it be somewhere? It looks like it may be somewhere in the New York area. A lot of people are saying what's holding the deal up to the Nets. What's holding the Nets deal up is Carmelo's reluctance to sign a 3-year extension. So with that being said, who knows if that deal will go through. But you know Carmelo would love to play in New York. And you know that if he was traded to New York, that he would sign that 3-year deal, 3-year extension for $65 million. You know he would sign it. And you know he wants to be in New York. And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And if he wants to, if he will go to New York, whether it be the Nets or the Knicks, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, and it's just a matter of where. But I think it's going to come down to the Knicks or the Nets. And thinking of that particular trade, Rip Hamilton been benched for the third straight game. So, and he was supposed to be a part of that trade. He's supposed to be a part of a 3-team deal, which had the Pistons, the Nets, and the Nuggets involved, all in that deal. And Hamilton was supposed to head to New Jersey in that particular trade, if the trade would go down. But again, as of right now, there's not a trade. Carmelo's still in Denver. But Carmelo, he said it, that it's been his dream, his ultimate dream, to play in New York. And his wife, Lala Vasquez, is from New York herself. So that may also have something to do with it. But it definitely should be interesting to see how that transpires and whether Carmelo goes to New Jersey, whether Carmelo goes to New York. Should be interesting. And the Nets are slated to play in Brooklyn in 2012. So with that being said, we'll see what happens there. And we'll see if Carmelo Anthony heads to New York, or New York meaning Brooklyn, New York, or Manhattan, Madison Square Garden with the New York Knicks. We'll see what happens. It's going to happen. And like I said before, it's just a matter of when it will happen. And Denver's playing some decent basketball right now. I mean, coming off a rout of the Miami Heat. And, well, LeBron James didn't play in that particular basketball game, but they played well, and they got the victory there against a still a very good team without LeBron James. And so they won that particular football game. I keep saying football, got football on the mind. It's football Saturday, divisional playoffs, got football on the mind. Denver won that particular basketball game in convincing fashion. They won it in convincing fashion. And they did what they did. They blew them out. Blew out the Miami Heat. Blew them out. Carmelo played well. J.R. Smith played well. Jonathan Phillips played well. Everybody played well in that particular basketball game. And so, I mean, maybe Carmelo stays put. Maybe he doesn't. We'll see. But it should be interesting to see how this thing plays out. And like I said before, he will go to New York. It's just a matter of Brooklyn. It's just a matter of Manhattan. Will Brooklyn stand up? Or is it going to be BK all day? Or is he going to go to the Mecca? Madison Square Garden. New York City. Downtown New York. Manhattan. Is that where he's going to go? We shall see. Only time will be the judge of that. So we'll see definitely what happens there. But it's definitely interesting situation. It's definitely something that we should all keep our eyes on. Where does Carmelo go? Where does Carmelo go? Where does he go? Where does he go? So we'll definitely see where Carmelo goes. And also, speaking of that trade, apparently the New York Knicks will trade Anthony Randolph for a first-round pick within the next couple of weeks, according to some sources close to the situation. And many believe they're doing that to possibly get some more assets, meaning the Knicks, to ultimately make a run at Carmelo Anthony. So, we'll see if that has anything to do with that particular situation. And we'll see if Carmelo does get traded to the Knicks. I mean, if you're Carmelo Anthony, I mean, I said this last week, and I'll say it again, I'll repeat it. Why would you want to go to the Eastern Conference and have to battle with LeBron James and Wayne Wayne and Chris Bosh in Miami for the next few years, if not for the next decade? Why would you want to do that? You're making your road to the finals harder. I mean, with the Lakers, you have Kobe Bryant, who's getting older. Tim Duncan's getting older in San Antonio. Dirk Nowitzki's getting older in Dallas. So if you stay in Denver, you start building some pieces, because you have some decent pieces there in Chauncey Billups, J.R. Smith, Nene. I mean, you have some pieces there. If you're Carmelo Anthony, would it be in your best interest? Would it be in your best interest to stay in Denver? I mean, would it be in your best interest to stay in Denver? I mean, why would you leave? Why would you leave Denver in that situation in Denver, in that situation in the Western Conference where you have an opportunity now? I mean, the Lakers aren't playing well. Granted, you have San Antonio and Dallas who are playing well, but Dallas, Caron Butler's out for the year. So you're missing that key piece. You're missing that key piece. So with that being said, why? Why would you want to go to the Eastern Conference and battle in the Eastern Conference with those two battle in the Eastern Conference with those, with that beast in Miami with Bosh, Wade, and LeBron James. Why would you want to do that? To me, it would make more sense for you, Carmelo Anthony, to stay out west and take advantage of Kobe getting older, Dirk getting older, of Tim Duncan getting older, and possibly contend with your Denver Nuggets team. A team that 2 years ago was in the Western Conference Finals and gave the Lakers all they could handle and take it under six games. Why would you do that? Why would you do that if you're Carmelo Anthony? Why would you do that? That's just my opinion. But again, he's an East Coast boy. His wife's an East Coast girl, New York girl. So, and, you know, Carmelo, I mean, not a big fan of New York, but my wife led me to New York. So maybe you're taking a page from my book. And then you don't even know it. You just took a page from my book and you don't even know it. But anyway, maybe that's why Carmelo, maybe Carmelo wants to be like me and go to New York City for a time. Maybe. Just maybe. Or maybe not. But anyway, it's just not, I see why he won't gonna want to go to New York. I mean, New York is a beautiful, great city, so they say. I disagree. But anyway, great place to play in terms of being at the Mecca and playing at the Mecca, which is Madison Square Garden. I mean, why would you not want to play in New York? So, I mean, there's some things to think about if you're Carmelo Anthony. But anyway, I think, again, your best shot to... If you're about winning championships, this is just my opinion, if you're about winning championships, your best shot to win a championship is in Denver. That's your best shot to win a championship. It's in Denver. That's your best shot. And you may not agree with me, but the crowd does. And the crowd goes wild. They agree with me. They agree with me. They agree with me. Come on, why can't you agree with me? You need to stay out west, man. So you can win some championships. So you can win some championships. You want to win championships, you want to win it out west. That's your best shot. That's your best shot. That is your best shot. Not the East, but the West. That is your best shot. So you wonder if that will change Carmelo's mind a little bit, what I just said. You wonder if he'll listen to me. You just wonder if he'll listen to me and decide to make the right decision. You wonder. But we'll see if Carmelo does what I think he should do and stay in Denver. We'll see. We shall see. I want to go back to the NFL for a second now. You have this situation where the league now has come out. The league is saying, you know what? They're cautioning teams about the trash talk. You have Bart Scott and Wes Welker getting into it. You also had Antonio Cromartie and Tom Brady getting into it, having a war of words. Now the league wants to step in. And they want to limit this thing. They're warning teams now. And they're saying that some of these players' comments could be taken into account when you talk about potential discipline for any type of illegal hits. So That will be taken into account now. The league has made it clear. Bart Scott maybe leads with his head against and hits Wes Walker. He might get fined more than he would have if he didn't make those comments. If Antonio Cromartie does the same thing to Tom Brady, he may get fined more than he would have. So, Terrell Suggs, the same deal for the Baltimore Ravens. If he hits Roethlisberger or anybody illegally, the fine might be bigger because of it, because of his trash talk. So, that's just something to look out for this upcoming NFL weekend. It's something to look out for and keep your eye on. The NFL has made it clear that they're cracking down on this thing, and that if you talk trash this week, and talking trash, if you make that hit, an illegal hit against somebody, it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you. It's going to hurt your pocket. They're going to dig into your pocket and start taking your money. They're going after game checks here. So it's something to keep watch for this upcoming weekend, and something to keep your eye on. And, I mean, trash talk is a part of football. It's part of the game. It's part of any sport. Teams like to trash talk. Players like to trash talk. It's fun. And it makes the game more interesting, quite frankly. It makes the game more interesting. Antonio Cromartie talking trash to Tom Brady makes that game more interesting. Terrell Suggs talking trash makes the game more interesting. Tom Brady talking trash. Wes Welker talking trash. Bart Scott talking trash. Makes these football games very, very interesting. More interesting than they already are. So in terms of cracking down on this or watching more closely because players are talking trash and they're going to watch them more closely, I mean, whatever. It's just whatever to me. I mean, trash talk is a part of sports. And like I said, it's a part of sports. And it's fun. It adds to the intrigue. Like, you have the boxers, they talk all the trash. They want you to buy the fight. They want you to watch the fight. They keep talking trash after trash after trash, so you will buy the fight. That's what they want. They want you to talk all the trash. They want to talk all the trash in the world, so you'll buy the fight. You'll buy into what they're saying. And it'll make you believe, hey, this is going to be a good fight. This is going to be, I got to buy this fight. I got to see this fight. And basically, this is going on here in my mind. Just like boxing. Guys are talking trash. Guys are doing so. Maybe to hype themselves up. Maybe to hype the game up. But ultimately, in doing so, I think it makes everybody more excited to watch. I think it makes everybody more excited to watch. And I'm excited to watch. But I would have watched anybody without the trash talk. But it adds to the intrigue. It definitely adds to the intrigue for me. So I'll be looking forward to this particular football game. I'll be looking for the games regardless, but I'll be looking for that little added piece now of the trash talk. And it may be, if you have a situation, let's say Cromartie hits Walker in a questionable way, and officials might err, because of the trash talk, and officials might say, you know what, that's a personal foul because of the trash talking and because of what could come of it. Maybe that could be in the mind of the officials. That could creep into the mind of the official if those type of things go on, if any type of questionable hits go on. So that should be interesting. It's just something to watch for. There's something out to watch for in this upcoming week and in this in these particular football games in this weekend. The numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You'll listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. And you can send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com. That's goforit.gan@gmail.com. A lot of coaching hires this week. Broncos, they hired John Fox to lead their team. John Elway, now the executive vice president out there. So he's named John Fox as his coach. And the Cleveland Browns are expected to name Pat Shurmur, son of Fritz Shurmur, defensive coordinator, former defensive coordinator. And Pat actually was on the Philadelphia Eagles staff for a time. And so this is, you bring in Shurmur now, offensive mind, and this is how Mike Holmgren and the Cleveland Browns want to build their team. This is the direction they want to take this team in. So we'll see what happens with the Browns and with the Denver Broncos. But those guys get opportunities. I mean, you figure he would get another opportunity because he's a guy who has proven to be a solid coach in this league, a guy who has led his team to a Super Bowl. And so he's a well-respected coach in this league. And with Pat Shurmur, again, a young guy. He was the offensive coordinator in St. Louis for a couple seasons. And he's been tapped by Mike Holmgren to turn the Cleveland Browns around. We'll see if he can do it. We'll see if he can get it done. But it's an opportunity for him to get it done. And the Browns, I mean, it's been a struggling franchise for a long time now. We'll see if things will change in Cleveland. We'll see if things will change in Cleveland with Pat Shurmur there. And Cleveland was a team that did compete throughout this year. And, I mean, they beat the Patriots this year, actually. And they competed in a lot of games. And they were a team that were very close to beating the Jets as well. So this is a team that has competed with some playoff teams throughout this year. But it was, I mean, Eric Mangini wasn't Holmgren's guy. So you knew he wouldn't be around for a long time, especially if he didn't win. He didn't have the benefit of the doubt because he wasn't Holmgren's guy. He didn't have that benefit of the doubt. So you knew once he struggled that it would be the end for him. And it is the end for him. And right now, they decided to go to Pat Shurmur, 45 years old, again, coordinator for offense coordinator for the Rams for the past two seasons. This is his opportunity now to shine. This is his opportunity to shine. And to prove that maybe he can get it done as a coach in the National Football League. So will he shine? Will he get it done? Time will tell. Time will be the judge. But again, he has an opportunity now to make it happen. He has an opportunity to make it happen. And, you know, Cleveland, that's a team, a city, actually, that's been through a lot. Of the whole LeBron James thing and that whole situation. And him leaving the team basically a sad sack of the NBA at this point. And a team that was chill, blown out by the Los Angeles Lakers this week. Blown out by the Los Angeles Lakers this week. They're struggling. They are struggling in Cleveland, Ohio. They're struggling bad. And his tweet has been the talk of the NBA right now. And as his former team, the Cavaliers, were getting blown out 112-57, as they were getting blown out by 55 points, excuse me, LeBron allegedly tweeted, "Crazy, karma is a bee, gets you every time. It's not good to wish bad on anybody. God sees everything." And LeBron is saying that's a message that he did not tweet, doesn't know how it was tweeted. But, I mean, when it's your own Twitter account, I don't see how. Well, I guess you can see how someone could hack your Twitter or someone could mess around with your Twitter account. But it's your own Twitter account. I don't see how someone else would be tweeting. You're LeBron James, so you would think that you would be in complete control of who's tweeting what with your Twitter account. You would think you would be in complete control of that. You would think. I mean, I would think that you would be in control of that. But maybe it's not. Maybe it's not. But I would think he would have complete control over that. I really would. I mean, you just would think he would have control over that. It's just like saying, I guess, in your autobiography, I didn't make those comments, a la Charles Barkley. I don't know how your own Twitter account, verified Twitter account of yours, and with that being said, it is shocking that if someone would tweet, other than yourself, someone would be tweeting on your account things that you didn't say. You didn't say it. You didn't say it. And it's been the talk of the league right now. So he said it's just how I was feeling at the time, James. He said that on Wednesday, retreating from the backlash that the tweet called stayed on. Yeah, I can't even read. Let's take this. Let's start it over. LeBron James was saying, it's just how I was feeling at the time. He said that on Wednesday, retreating from the backlash the tweet called on the day. It wasn't even a comment from me. It was someone who sent it from me, and I sent it out. But like I said, it wasn't towards that team. It definitely wasn't a good showing by that team last night. I know they wish they played better, but nothing towards them. Okay. Well, he's saying that it was sent by him, but it wasn't towards the team, meaning the Cleveland Cavaliers. So maybe it was to Dan Gilbert, the owner of Cleveland. Maybe it was to him. I don't know. But it was the comments that he made. But if you look at, I mean, there is some truth to what he's saying. You don't wish bad on people, and that's essentially what Dan Gilbert did, saying and all that. He wished bad on LeBron. He wished bad on this whole situation. And that he will take a curse, the curse in Cleveland, down south to Miami. That's what Dan Gilbert said. That's what he believes. And so you can understand. I mean, you don't wish bad on people. You don't wish bad on people. And when you do, it can come back and get you. It can definitely come back to get you when you wish bad on people. And he wished bad on Cleveland. Excuse me. Dan Gilbert wished bad on LeBron James. And in wishing bad on LeBron James, maybe, he called the situation they have now. No, he didn't. You look at that situation in Cleveland. I mean, once LeBron James left, You knew everything would go downhill. You knew everything would go downhill and that it wouldn't be a good situation in Cleveland after LeBron left. You knew it. And so it's unfortunate. I mean, the whole situation is unfortunate if you look back on it. You look up back on that whole situation, it's unfortunate, the whole decision show and LeBron saying that, telling the world that he's taking his talents to South Beach, putting it on national TV that he wasn't wanted, that he doesn't want to be with you anymore. And again, I equated it to when it happened to your girlfriend or wife jumping on national TV and telling you she don't want you no more. And that's the way I look at it. That's what I equate it to. Your girlfriend jumping on national TV and telling the world that she don't want you no more. That's the way I look at it. That's what I equate it to. And I think, in my mind, that's why there's such a backlash in Cleveland. And that's why they're still upset to this day. And time has a way of healing all wounds. And you hope time would ultimately heal that wound. And who knows? I mean, does number 23 get retired in Cleveland? That's a question. That should be interesting. And that needs to be answered, I guess, at some point. But you figure if Dan Gilbert's still the owner at the time, that it probably will not get retired. You figure that's a possibility that it may not get retired. You figure that's a possibility. You figure that's a possibility that it may not get retired. Should he get retired? Probably. I mean, they had, he had a great run in Cleveland. Got him to the finals once. I mean, and just made them a contender. Basketball was dead in Cleveland before LeBron James. Basketball was dead in Cleveland before LeBron James. It's dying again because LeBron is gone, going on and left. I mean, basketball, and it's sad because, again, with that whole situation, I rooted hard. I rooted home. For LeBron to stay home in Cleveland. I rooted hard for it to happen, but it didn't. LeBron felt like he needed to take his talents to South Beach, felt like he wanted to make his road to the championship a little easier. And in doing so, he decided to team up with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, and ultimately, try to win a championship with those boys. Will it happen? Will it happen? That's the big question. Will it happen? I mean, they were on a great run, and at one point winning 20 of the last 21 games. I mean, they were on a great run, playing some great basketball, playing at a great, great level. Playing at a great level. But again, we'll see what happens in June. We'll see what happens in June. Again, the numbers to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. And again, we're expected to be joined by Gloria Gobon, fiancé of Matt Bowens, and Gloria is a part of Basketball Wives, which airs each and every Sunday on VH1, 8:00 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at 7:00 Central. So it should be interesting to get Gloria's take on the show and see what's going on with Gloria. She doesn't have as prominent of a role as she had the first year, but she has made some appearances on the show, and she will make a few more appearances on the show. So it should be interesting to get her take on the show and how she feels about the show and how she feels about some of the girls on the show. I mean, if you watch the show, you're seeing that she wasn't getting along with a few of the girls. So it should be interesting to get her take on basketball-wise. And on some of the girls, definitely should be interesting. And look forward to having her. She should be joining us in the next couple minutes. And, again, we're going to talk basketball-wise here. With Gloria Govan, fiance of Matt Barnes, Lakers forward. And Matt actually is out. He's actually out for the next 8 weeks. Hurt his left knee. Left meniscus tear. And so he should be out for 8 weeks. And Lakers will miss him. Key contributor, guy who does all the dirty work for your ball club. Guy who can hit the three, a guy who can defend. You definitely want Matt Barnes and love to have a Matt Barnes on your roster. But again, he's out for 8 weeks now, and tough situation for Matt Barnes. Definitely a tough situation for Matt Barnes. But he's out again for 8 weeks, and hopefully he can work his way back in and contribute for the Lakers. And if you're a Lakers fan, hopefully in contributing, he can ultimately get your team to where you want to go. And that's back to the NBA Finals. And that's another ring for Kobe and the Lakers. That's what you want if you're a Lakers fan. So we'll see what happens. And we'll see if Matt Barnes can get himself healthy back and contributing for the Los Angeles Lakers. Again, he's supposed to be out for 8 weeks. So hopefully he can make a return back for the Lakers. Now, I want to go back to the NBA for a second, and I want to look at the Dallas Mavericks, a team right now that's been struggling. Right now, a team that's they're missing Dirk Nowitzki. They're missing Caron Butler, and they're struggling right now, not playing great basketball. They lost to the Spurs last night in San Antonio, 101-89. They're 2-7 without Dirk Nowitzki, and they have started off great to this year. I mean, right now they're 26-12. Everything started well for them this year. They got up to a great start, and they were playing some great basketball. So with Caron Butler going down and with Dirk Nowitzki going down, I mean, it's a tough situation in L.A. Definitely a tough situation in L.A. I mean, it's not L.A. It's a tough situation in Dallas. So with those guys going down, I mean, that's big. That's big. Caron Butler going down, that's big. Dirk Nowitzki going down. That's big. It's going to be hard for your team to come back from that. It's going to be hard for your team to come back from that. San Antonio is playing some great basketball right now. Great basketball. 34-6. Tim Duncan, not putting up Tim Duncan-type numbers, but taking a backseat to the Ginobili's of the world, to the Parkers of the world. And with that being said, and taking a backseat, the team is still going strong. Still making the plays and still winning some basketball games. Still getting it done. They're still getting it done. Still getting it done. And right now they're 34-6. They are 34-6. And about to, if you look at it, they're number one in the West. They're 21-2 at home. 21-2 at home. So this is a dominant San Antonio team right now. A very dominant San Antonio team. And they're playing some great basketball. Playing some great, great basketball right now. And there's no denying the type of basketball that they're playing. They're getting it done. They're getting it done. And if you look at it, Ginobili, Parker, they're two leading scorers, and you got Tim Duncan who's averaging only 13 points a game. Only 13 points a game for Tim Duncan. Only 13 points. And so, with that being said, this team is doing it without Timmy. This team is doing it without Tim Duncan. They're getting it done without Tim Duncan. So they deserve a round of applause. applause for the San Antonio Spurs for getting it done with Tim Duncan taking a backseat to Ginobili, to Parker, and playing his role but getting it done. Playing his role and still getting it done. And the team's still getting it done. The team's still having success. Lots of success. 34-6 type of success. So, give San Antonio a lot of credit. Give San Antonio a lot of credit. They're getting it done. They're getting it done. In unconventional ways, I guess you can say, without Tim Duncan. Doing what Tim Duncan normally does. Without Tim Duncan putting up the type of points that he normally does. They're getting it done. Give them a lot of credit. Give them a lot of credit. They're still getting it done. And they're getting it done. Despite Tim Duncan only averaging 13 points a game. They're getting it done without the big fundamental doing what he normally does. But they're 34-6, and I mean, watch out for these Spurs. Watch out for these Spurs. And I mean, everybody figured the Western Conference going into the season with the Lakers and everybody else. But the Spurs had something to say about that, and the Mavericks for a time had something to say about that. Those two teams had something to say about that. They had something to say about that. Had a lot to say about it, actually. They had a lot to say about it. And so if you look at the Western Conference right now, you have San Antonio leading the way. You have the Lakers, who are second. You have Oklahoma City there in the mix. You have Oklahoma City there in the mix. Utah still there. And you have Dallas. You also have New Orleans still playing fairly decent basketball, 8 games over .500. And still playing some fairly decent basketball. And so give them credit. They're still playing some decent basketball. Still playing decent basketball. So give them a lot of credit. Give them a lot of credit. Give them a whole lot of credit. But they're getting it done. They're getting it done. They're getting it done. But the Western Conference, it's off the grass. And again, going into the season, I didn't expect to say that. It's up for grabs. It's definitely up for grabs. Definitely up for grabs. And with that being said, we'll see what happens as the season progresses. But the way I look at it is, there are some opportunities. If you're a San Antonio Spurs fan, if you're a Dallas Mavericks fan, to make it, to take it to that next level and to ultimately get to the finals, there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity for San Antonio, for Dallas, to get to the finals. We also have to look at Oklahoma City, a team that I think is a year or two away. But a team that I believe could ultimately get it done. A team that ultimately can get it done. I think they can get it done. They can definitely get it done. And with Kevin Durant and with Jeff Green and Russell Westbrook and those boys, it's a young, up-and-coming, talented ball club for the team that can get it done ultimately in the playoffs. I don't think they'll win a championship, but I think they can win a round. They can win a round in the playoffs, depending on who they play. It all depends on who they play. They can win a round in the playoffs if they get the right matchup. We are now being joined by Basketball Wives star Gloria Govan. Gloria?
Hey. How are you?
How are you? Pretty good.
Good. What's going on over there?
Everything's going well. Everything's going well. Look forward to talking to you. So let's get it in. We've got a few minutes left, so we're going to hit all the tough issues.
All right. Bring it.
Now, Gloria.
Yeah.
You were a part of the first season of Basketball Wives, and you had your drama. You had the drama with Royce. You had the drama with Shawnee. I mean, coming back for the second season, there was talk that you wouldn't come back. What made you come back?
You know, over the summer, Matt and I had our relationship went through like a serious emotional roller coaster. So, and there's just so much rumors and, you know, talk behind my back or, you know, oh, if she was in front of me, I would say. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and just kind of set everybody straight and make sure everybody knows what's going on from our mouth and the horse's mouth. So I just wanted to set the girls straight and give them the opportunity to tell me what they said they would say if I was in front of them. So, you know, it was one of the main reasons.
And speaking of the summer, you had the situation with Matt Barnes, your fiance. You had a domestic dispute, and you told Sister to Sister magazine that the whole situation was blown out of proportion. You have to perform now. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No relationship is perfect, and Matt and I, obviously, our relationship is far from perfect, and I think it was just another kind of bickering, you know, me knowing how to push buttons, you know, just another argument, kind of. We live in a really small cul-de-sac in Sacramento, so, you know, neighbors are easily nosy, you know, peeking over the fence and whatnot, but it was nothing serious. You know, charges were dropped due to insufficient evidence, you know, which says a lot. You know, I think the cops were just kind of rookies or excited that it was Matt Barnes. But it was. It was, you know, and I'll take a lot of blame for that. It was a lot of just pushing buttons and knowing how to get under Matt's skin, which I do very well. So, you know, it was just nothing.
So you're just saying it's just a byproduct of essentially nosy neighbors?
Yeah, I think nosy neighbors is also just kind of having put our relationship, you know, in the spotlight, being on the show and Matt being from Sacramento, living in Sacramento, you know, our relationship now gets a lot more attention than it would have, you know. So I think it's a byproduct of a couple things, really.
Did you find that your relationship with Matt was affected by being all Basketball-wise? Because Matt has come out and said he was against the show and he dislikes the show.
Right. You know, I think it had, I would say the media that was brought by the show, I think, affected our relationship, both positive and negative. You know, it was just, the media can be so cruel. it could tear you down. And, you know, there are some times where, you know, Matt and I really had to realize what we put ourselves in, you know, or especially me, I put myself out there and, again, brought our relationship to the spotlight. So, it was really hard adjusting to it at first, you know, especially if the media doesn't like you or anything that you do wrong or, you know, what you're wearing, you know, who he's taking pictures with. You're like, oh man, you know, it's crazy. Right. So I definitely think the media from the show definitely brought some, you know, some kind of issues into our relationship, but we're okay now.
And you talked about the eventful summer that you had, and part of that was calling off the wedding. You guys were supposed to get married in August, and tell us what happened there.
Yeah, you know, again, we thought we were going back to Orlando, and of course, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get called back. So that was another issue that we were dealing with, you know, not knowing where we were going to be. It was talk of Cleveland, Orlando, Miami, LA. You know, so many different ways we were being pulled, and that takes a lot of stress and a lot of effect on our relationship. You know, just not knowing where we're going to be and where the kids are going to go to school and doctors and just so much stuff that goes into picking up and moving. You know, and then, of course, the wedding itself was just getting way too big and way too out of control. And, you know, the show wanted to film it. And it was just, we realized that we were doing it for the wrong reason. You know, we wanted a small, intimate wedding. And so it just kind of got out of control. And so finally, we were just like, you know what? Let's just want to save our money. You know what I mean? We're happy in our relationship. Go ahead.
Is the wedding still on at some point?
Yeah, we're going to get married. Absolutely. Marriage is really important to both of us. But, you know, I think this time around we're going to do it on our own. without the pressure of our family and friends being like, well, you guys have kids out of wedlock and just get it done and, you know, be traditional. So I think we're just kind of going to do it on our own terms, but there's no specific date. You know, I think if we do it, it's going to be a spur of the moment, inviting people over for a barbecue. You know, the pastor is going to pop out.
Right.
So it'll happen.
And now we're talking to Gloria Govan, star of Basketball Wives with Jairus, each and every Sunday, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central, on VH1. Now, Gloria, you've had the situation with Shawnee. You and Shawnee definitely don't get along. There have been rumors that your sister Laura had an affair with Shaq, and that was one of the reasons that Shawnee and Shaq were divorced. Being that Shawnee is the executive producer of the show, does that make it difficult being a part of this show?
You know, it did at first, but I was thought that Shawnee was going to be able to, you know, be a grown, mature woman about the situation and, you know, kind of do her own investigating without bringing me into it. Now, I was told that, you know, the first season was just going to be about bringing positivity to the Basketball Wives and showing them that we're not all groupies and, you know, that we're educated. And then when I realized the show was basically about my sister, you know, I was kind of like, wait a minute. What just happened here? Like, this is not why I joined. But, you know, it is a little difficult because there are tons, Shawnee and I don't get along, and there are tons of things that I want to say, but it's kind of like going off on your boss a little bit. You know what I mean? So
right.
You kind of have to have some restriction and be able to, you know, just be professional and mature about some things. But don't get me wrong. I mean, as you've seen before, you know, you've seen on the show, there are times where I kind of, you know, I let my guard down, and I let the girls know that you're not going to talk to me any old kind of way. I don't really care what you executive producer of, so, you know.
And speaking of that, you had the situation 2 episodes ago where Shawnee, Roy, Evelyn, Jennifer, you were sitting down eating with Susie, and they pretty much kind of just ran in on you and you had the whole incident with Shawnee, you guys going back and forth, calling each other all types of names. What was your reaction to that situation?
You know, I was just really surprised. I was mainly surprised that these grown women, I mean, because they're all almost 10 years older than me, that these grown women had that much time, you know, especially Shawnee. I mean, she has kids, so I was just kind of like, why are you so concerned about what's going on in my life? You know, like, I've been dropped the whole you and my sister issue. Like, that doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect my sister. Like, you have it, like, what? You know what I mean? Like, you should be reading your kids a book. Volunteer at your kids' school. Don't be on the computer reading about my life. It just surprised me. If I don't like somebody, I'm not paying attention to what's going on in their life. You know, so was just, go ahead. Okay, you go.
Do you regret anything that happened there or regret how you handled that particular situation?
No, not at all. You know, I think I kind of, you know, I stood my ground. Like I said, I wanted to make sure that the girls knew that, you know, I wasn't just going to sit there and let them talk about me or my family any old kind of way and just, you know, allow them to disrespect me like that. So not by any means. You know, I think I let them know that, you know, I'm not a punk. I'm not just going to sit here and, you know, take it without saying anything. So I don't regret any of that situation at all.
And you told Vibe magazine that you felt that your fellow castmates were jealous and bitter. I mean, you have a situation with Jennifer, her and her husband not going well, Shawnee, her situation as well, and Evelyn with Antoine Walker and so on and so forth. But do you still believe that these girls are jealous and bitter towards you because you have what is perceived as a fairly decent relationship?
You know, I wouldn't say, like, so much as, like, just, I wouldn't say jealous, but I would just say that the girls, I think, were irritated with the fact that, you know, Matt and I have worked it out, and we do love and are committed to one another, and we have a family. You know, like I said, marriage is very important to us, and it's going to happen one day. But also, you know, that I wasn't going to throw my family or Matt under the bus for them. You know, as you can see, the women talk very badly about their exes or husbands, and I wasn't going to do that. You know, I love Matt. We have our issues, don't get me wrong, but he's still the father of my children. He's still my fiancé, so So I'm not going to talk about him like a dog to please other people, you know. And I'm not going to talk about my sister like a dog to win over people's friendships. It's not that serious to me. So I would say they're irritated with that and, you know, try to make it seem like I'm just Miss Perfect, which by no means am I perfect. But I just wasn't going to disrespect my family or my fiancé for them. So, you know, I think that's what they were kind of irritated about and just more so bitter, you know, that I wasn't kind of interested in joining their little wolf pack.
And you have this your situation with your sister with Gilbert Arenas, and apparently she hasn't heard from him in a long time. Is everything okay with your sister?
Yeah, she's good. She's a really strong person. You know, they have three kids together. The fourth one's on their way. You know, and again, I think like every relationship, there are so many, you know, jumps and leaps and bounds that you have to go through, and especially it just makes it that much harder when, you know, when a person has that much money and that much, you know, fame and star power. It's just kind of crazy. But, you know, Laura's getting through it. And she's, like I said, she's really strong, and I think she's just ready for a new chapter in her life.
And how would you respond to there's rumors about, and we got to ask it so you can pretty much put them to bed. Now, there have been rumors that many believe that you are with Matt, and because of who Matt is, and essentially they're calling you a gold digger. How would you respond to something like that?
You know, that's why I joined the show originally, is that I wanted to show people, like, I've known Matt since I was 12, you know. I don't know any 12-year-old that has a gold digger mentality. you know, and we've kept up with each other, and, you know, we both play basketball. I play college basketball, and he obviously played college basketball. So, you know, we traveled in somewhat of the same circle when it comes to sports. So I just think it's kind of sad that anybody that's with someone with money is automatically a gold digger, you know. So I just think it's funny. I kind of just brushed that one off because I've had to deal with that for almost 5 years. So I'm over that. I'm just kind of like, okay.
So I guess we can be clear now that you're telling the world that you are not a gold digger. You love Matt for who Matt is.
I do. I love Matt for who he is. You know, all the problems and issues we have going on, still love the man to death, believe it or not.
and real quickly, Matt has been injured recently, about 8 weeks. Injured his right knee. How's things going with that?
He's doing good. You know, this is his first major surgery of his career. So, surprisingly enough, you know, the trainers are really surprised and excited about his recovery. You know, he had a tear in his meniscus, and you know, it's supposedly he's supposed to be out for 8 weeks. But Matt's really strong, and you know, he loves basketball, so he's going to go live in the rehab and physical therapy center, and, you know, I'm hoping he'll be back sooner than 8 weeks, but he's doing really well. He's hobbling around here.
And we're going to see you on the show a few more times now. You don't have the prominent role that you had last year, but we will see you again?
I think so. I think I'll make a couple more cameos, I think, towards the end, you know, and maybe a couple more episodes. So you'll see me, more so in a positive light, you know, with the kids and that. And just our move to L.A., which has been a major adjustment, but we're loving it out here. So you'll see a couple things.
And real quickly, you and Matt do a lot of charitable things in the community. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt started his foundation, Athletes Versus Cancer. His mom passed away of cancer after 26 days of being diagnosed. All of her cancers were at stage 4, so, you know, it took a major effect on Matt. His mom was one of his best friends. So he started this foundation, Athletes Versus Cancer, and he really just wants to, you know, involve his communities. And we're looking to get a mama van, which will allow low-income women and children to be screened for cancer, you know, and then we guide them in the right direction of getting insurance or, you know, a support group or just tips on education and how to be healthier. So we have a couple things going on. You know, we're doing an all-star event Thursday, February 17th at Boulevard 3, and that's benefiting his foundation. You know, Snoop will be DJing. Him and Chili from TLC will be hosting it. So we have a lot of good things from Athletes Versus Cancer coming out. Make sure you guys stay tuned.
Gloria, it was a pleasure talking to you.
Oh,
thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely.
And again,
I'm on Twitter. Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. Go for it, Kat.
Okay, nice. All right, I'm at Glow Govan.
Gloria, thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely.
It was greatly appreciated. And again, you can see Gloria and all the rest of the girls on VH1's Basketball Wise each and every Sunday on VH1 at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central. Gloria, we thank you for stopping by. And, again,
thank
it was great.
So
we appreciate
much,
it.
Thank you so much, guys. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you
and
so much. Anytime.
Good luck in the future, and hopefully you and Matt will get down the aisle.
Thanks so much. I'll talk to you guys later.
Take care.
Bye.
Gloria Govan, Basketball Wise. I want to thank Gloria for stopping by. I want to thank everybody for listening. And again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other shows. This is Paul Gann. See you later.